Other side note, do you realize we're both on Commander Cast tomorrow?
Oh, we both are?
Yeah. We're both screwed.
Hey there, folks over at CommanderCast.com and MTGCast.com. It's time for another episode of Rivals Duel, the show where Noel and I are here, we're present, and really, can you expect any more of us? You ask so much, people. You ask so much.
Wow. Eric's feeling kind of morose today, apparently.
Been playing a lot of Bloodborne. I've been dying a lot. It's really a downer on your self-esteem.
I, on the other hand, have been on Borderlands 2, or Borderlands the pre-sequel, which means I've been bashing things with colored laser weapons, so I'm in a pretty good mood.
You've been playing the video game equivalent of a bright casino designed to entice you to start playing and never stop?
Yep, pretty much.
Yep.
Definitely got to the... didn't play it when it came out on the Xbox 360, and so... on the Xbox 360, so when it came out for the One, I've been grinding through it. And I just beat it for the first time, so leave me alone, it's fun.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I actually haven't played the pre-sequel yet. I got way into Borderlands 2, so I'll probably play the pre-sequel at some point, but at this particular juncture, Bloodborne has consumed all of my free time.
Welcome to our video game podcast, but...
Yeah, the new video game podcast rolling out on the Magic Network.
Yes, pretty much.
We have a full normal Rivals Duel episode today. We are going to be talking later on about a series of artifact generals, and I think I'm just going to leave it at that for now. But before that, we have news, we have emails, we have viewer comments telling Noel that he's wrong, 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 which are my favorite kind of viewer comments. And we're recording this episode on the day of Wednesday, April 15th.
Yep. In case you're wondering, yes, that is the day before this comes out, so you can tell how busy our schedules have been. But let's get me being dumb out of the way right away.
Absolutely. Rip off that Band-Aid, Noel. Sure.
So I messed up a ruling on the last episode, specifically about Chaos Warp and the new Tuck Rule. And lots of people pointed out to me that I was wrong through various means, and I appreciate that. What it actually is that with Chaos Warp and the... with a new command rule no longer tucking, you have a replacement effect sending it to the command zone. What you have is that the replacement effect replaces it going to the command zone with the library. The spell still does as much as it can, so you'll still get that top card. Where I was wrong is though that because the replacement effect is replacing the whole thing of it being shuffled into the library, means that it replaces the shuffle as well as the being shuffled into the library part. So you don't actually have to shuffle. Which can make this card just devastatingly good.
If you target your own commander with Chaos Warp now, and you put something really expensive on the top of your library, you can rig it.
Yeah. It replaces the whole shuffle. The rule you are looking for, if you're looking for a comp rules reference, is 701.16D. If an effect would cause a player to shuffle one or more specific objects into a library, and a replacement prevention effect causes all such objects to be moved to another zone instead, that library isn't shuffled.
Yep, and I know that rule, because I screamed it at Noel on our last podcast, and he cut it for time.
Screamed is not the correct word. And also, our last podcast was super long, so I will not apologize for my editing skills, but yeah. So I messed up. For those of you who are wondering, that's actually the correct ruling. You don't, you do still get the card, you don't shuffle your library. So do with that what you will.
To be fair, this is a Noel and Eric were both wrong moment, because I played it as the replace, because it doesn't get shuffled, the rest of the card doesn't resolve. But that is not the case. The person still gets whatever permanence is on top of their library, they just don't get to shuffle their deck first.
Alright, and that will probably be the second to last time we talk about Chaos Warp on this episode.
And now we move on to emails. Noel, you said you had an email. Would you like to talk about that one first?
I did. Mine is nothing more than a warm, fuzzy email, but I wanted to share it anyway.
Okay.
For no other reason than about a week, 2 weeks ago, I was kind of in, let's call it an existential funk.
Oh.
I was kind of morose. I had a bunch of things just not go my way in reality. The world seemed to have lined itself up in a direct opposition to me, and I was kind of... One of my friends used the word mopey, and that's probably the best word for it. And so I just wanted to thank David. He wrote me, basically, he found an old thing he had sent me back when I was writing for Commander Cast. I sent him a copy of a deck list for an Oros the Avenger deck list, which I should play a little bit more. But I was going through my old emails and came across this apparently a while ago. I just want to say thanks for your help with the deck. It became one of my favorite decks. He tried Zergo. He tried Alicia when they came out. Needless to say, he's in the process of reconstructing his Oros deck to get my Wrath on, while hopefully adding a bit of the aggro goodness that I found in Zergo and Alicia. Long story short, I really appreciate the help you gave me. I really enjoy listening to you and Rarik on Rivals Duel. I haven't missed an episode. Keep up the great work. David. And I just wanted to thank David, because it was one of those things where I was having a really lousy time, and he sent me a really nice email, and I just wanted to say thank you, and tell people, like, this is one of those weird, like, heart-to-heart intimate moments with Noel. If there's something like us, now not necessarily us, but Commander Cast, another podcast, or something like that that you like, there's always this whole perception about you don't want to be a raving fan and send people fan mail. Everybody likes fan mail. Everybody likes knowing that they're appreciated. If you have some kind of media that you enjoy, the people who produce it out of love for you guys. So consider, if you will, sending, you know, hey, I really like your stuff. Not necessarily to me and Eric. This is not a desperate plea for attention. But if you have someone you like, I'd encourage you to reach out to them, because you never know when you're going to hit a person like me who's having a bad day.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, if you like Commander Cast, make sure to send, like, just one time, just send Will or Calvin an email being like, yo, guys, I really, really like the cast, or any other, like, podcast especially, because we operate on the internet. So it's like, we have a very direct link with our fans, and we kind of, most of us are unpaid, so we're doing it specifically for the fans. So if you got, like, a cooking podcast or an exercise podcast or a media podcast that you just really, really like, do not hesitate to just send them a big ups, because it's part of the reason they're doing it.
Mm-hmm. So that was my email.
And also because they, I was going to say, and also because they love the sound of their own voice.
This is also true. But once again, big thanks, David. I appreciate it.
Thank you, David, for knocking Noel out of his funk.
Yeah. An existential funk.
And I just have an update on our hat deck, because we were talking about Noel's Shirtless Men deck so much that one of our fans, George, decided to make a deck of the best hats in Magic. We recommended Sekuar as the general. Is that correct? Yeah, yeah. You said that the new Sekuar has the best hat in Magic.
Old Sekuar also has it a hat, but it's much less impressive.
It is admittedly a little less impressive. But he did not go with Sekuar. He decided to go with Cedrus.
Okay, respectable hat.
Cedrus also has a respectable hat, and I think this guy wanted some cards that worked well with some blue cards, because he really likes the hat on Deadeye Navigator.
Oh.
But, yeah, he says that... I ended up using Cedrus as he has a cool hat and plays well with cards like Deadeye, Zealous Conscripts, Dreamscape Artists, and thanks to you, Venser, and Jeering Instigator. Thanks for all your help. It should end up being an interesting deck. Once you have the deck together, send me a list, because I want to see that deck.
Yeah, absolutely. I will throw it in the show notes if you send us a list. Like, I would love to see this list of hatted men, or hatted peoples, I guess.
Hatted peoples? Maybe Noel and I can... Or I can build something with a facsimile to the list, and then Noel and I can have a hatted men versus, or hatted peoples versus shirtless men fight.
Yes, because there's been so much call for that.
The epic battle of the century. Everyone wants to know who's better, people who don't wear shirts or people who do wear hats.
We're giant nerds, you know that, right?
This week on Noel Stating the Obvious. Yeah. Now, moving on to our next section. Alright, and then one more quick thing to talk about before we get into the proper subject of this episode, because we, for once, I never thought I'd say this, but thank God there are no Magic spoilers.
Yeah, we are totally, like, and don't get me wrong, next week they start for Modern Masters 2, but...
Yep.
We don't have to deal with a bunch of new cards today.
Jesus. But anyway, Before we get into the discussion proper, I just wanted to let the folks at home know that Noel and I are actually going to be on a bunch more shows in the near future on CommanderCast. Both Noel and I are going to be on the next episode of CommanderCast. We are judging a deck building, competition for Iron Chef EDH, along with the rest of the cast. It should be quite entertaining to see Noel and I get crammed in, once again, having our chemistry crammed in at the same time as the rest of the guys.
Yeah, both Eric and I are on the cast at the same time, so there's no way that's not going to go off the rails.
Mm-hmm. And I think Calvin's there, too.
Oh, is like, he? Oh.
Yeah.
We're going to get you nothing and I, done.
Yeah, you and I and Calvin are the worst for that.
Man.
It's going to be... this will be the show to see. I specifically requested that we record at a much earlier time than normal because of this.
Yeah.
So if you don't usually listen to Commander Cast, but for some reason do listen to us, please check out next week's episode. It should be quite the show. And I'm also letting you guys know, I'm actually on a 3-day constant stretch of recording right now because I'm going to be doing a deck builder spotlight for Mark on the site. Mark has done a really cool thing. He kind of revived Andy's old Deck Builder Spotlight series. He did, the first one was Glissa, I think, and then the most recent one was Calvin doing Ashling the Pilgrim. I am going to be on doing Prosh, because I gave him a list of decks, and he's like, come on, you know we want to talk about Prosh. So that's what I'll be talking about. And, Noel, I know, is also eventually going to be on the show, talking about mystery deck number 12. So I'm keep an eye out for my episode and keep an eye out for Noel's episode sometime in the future.
Yeah. Yeah, but I get Eric first. I mean, he gets, you know, William and Calvin get him on, then, and then Mark gets him and they get to gnaw on my scraps. So.
Noel called dibs.
Yep. He's my co-host. Mine, I say, mine.
You know, I'm kind of feeling good about it. It's making me feel warm and fuzzy to feel like a jealously guarded commodity.
More like I'm renting you out to other podcasts.
That, it just has so many kinds of implications that I can't make jokes about on our podcast.
Yeah, one involves me in a fursuit and a big hat. I'll give you a hint. That's the one I'm looking for.
Yeah, I know. I have your address, right? I'm going to mail you a big hat and a cane.
This is called How Close Can We Get to the iTunes Explicit Tag Without Actually Getting It?
Absolutely. And now we are off to talk about artifacts. Specifically today, we're going to be taking 10 of who we think are some of the better artifact-specific generals, the generals who do shenanigans, what with the metal stuff, and we are going to hash them out in what a section that Noel appropriately named the Gauntlet, kind of like we did for the Orsov, to try and determine amongst ourselves who we agree is the best one, or much more likely, who we disagree are the best ones and are going to verbally beat each other for half an hour to try and establish who's more dominant.
Sounds about right. Definitely that second one.
All right, today we're talking about the best of the brown decks, the best generals that do fun stuff with artifacts, and we are not sticking to mono artifact because that's who the best colorless general is a discussion for a different day. Instead, we have taken 10 commanders that do cool stuff with artifacts, and we're going to make them beat each other up until we determine who the top 3 to 5 are.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's no way we're going to come out with just one winner, because it depends a lot on what you're going to do with the deck. But and we're going to throw anything we can at it. It can be power level. It can be how much we hate sitting down across from this deck. It can be anything we want as far as that goes. Just the ones that we think are, in our opinion, best.
Yep, and it's going to be just personal grudge match arguing between me and Noel like the good old days, a good way to cleanse our palate after the weeks and weeks of spoiler-a-thons and sets. So it should be nice and relaxed fun. Noel, do you just want to, before we actually get into them, list who the 10 people we're going to be talking about are?
Sure. Our 10 choices, in no particular order, are Duretti, Schaefer Savant, Slowbad, Goblin Tinkerer, Bosch Island, Iron Golem, Kirkesh, the something that I forgot to write down.
Anaki Ancient.
Thank you. Karn Silver Golem, Muzio Visionary Architect, Arkan Dagson, Sharam the Hegemon, Sidri Galvanic Genius, and Glissa the Traitor.
Mm-hmm. So lots of really, really cool options. Noel, since you're the one with the list directly in front of you, I'm going to leave it up to you to decide who we talk about first.
Sure, let's spin the big wheel. Let's start with Bosch Iron Golem.
Oh, Bosch. He is a giant golem himself, so it's a pretty good place to start. Let's open with this. Have you ever actually made a Bosch deck?
No.
Have you ever wanted to make a Bosch deck?
Also, no.
See, I have made a Bosch deck.
Okay.
So I can talk about this from a position of a certain amount of authority. And I would like to open with Bosch is expensive.
Yes, Bosch costs 8 mana to go out the gate.
He is extraordinarily expensive, which is like, he is also a 6-7 with trample, and he's got an activate ability that you could use right away, theoretically, if you get up to 12 mana. It's not a huge downside in this particular deck. It just means that you're only really going to get one kind of Bosch deck, and that is Bosch and his many, many mana rocks.
Yep, there's going to be a lot of mana rocks involved with this deck. You also lose, so you know, at least one of these has access to green to where you can ramp the, let's call it, more natural way. Natural as opposed to art. Natural as opposed to artificial.
Yeah.
Like, there's no, like, you can play your Braid of Fire. You can play Braid of Fire in this deck. Have all the mana you
Braid
want
of Fire.
On your upkeep.
Braid of Fire. Yeah, Braid of Fire is actually a beast in Bosch. I can say that with a good amount of authority. Braid of Fire is terrifying in Bosch. But it is one of those things where you have to let your Bosch, you have to play Bosch without that mana, and he has to live for a turn. But if he does, then you just Braid of Fire your entire board and kill everyone.
Yeah. This deck has always struck me as more fun than good. Like, it's just like, 8 mana is a lot. A lot.
A lot. Like, eight mana is reaching Eldrazi levels of mana, and this guy is not an Eldrazi.
Yeah, think of all the cool things you can cast with 8 mana in red. You can have almost any dragon you want.
That's true.
As opposed to this thing that, and if this had 7 power, I might be a little bit more on board.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because then at least you're in the 3-hit club, but...
It doesn't even have that.
Yeah, like... I give Bosch a thorough pass. Like, I'm sure the deck is fine, but it feels like it's coming in at, like, a C- for me.
See, what I will say in Bosch's defense is that it is one of those Rube Goldberg machine decks where you need so many pieces to make it work, and and it's just so unlikely for them to come together that it 9 times out of 10, your deck just kind of does something that was a backup plan when you're winning. But, like, 1 out of every 10 dimes, Bosch does something spectacular. And if you're one of those people who lives for the spectacular games that you get to tell people about later, it's a pretty good option for that. You get, Bosch is a good candidate for the Bludgeon Brawl deck, which is awesome. Because you're already playing high-costed, you want to play a lot of mana rocks and a lot of high-costed artifacts. So he's got that going for him. And it's just... There's something between Bosch and Brian Stoutarm, which I actually eventually turned my Bosch deck into. There's something really satisfying about killing your opponent by throwing things at their face. Like, Goblin Bombardment is still one of my favorite cards, not because it's great, because it is great, but because of the knowledge that I'm catapulting things at my opponent's dome, and that's how I'm winning. And so, if you wanted Fling to be your general, he's an option for that, and it's a really fun idea.
Sure. I think that's all I have to say about Bosch. Like,
yeah, I don't think Bosch...
Yeah.
He's not going to be fighting it out for top spot.
Yeah, 6 out of 10. Thanks for coming. Here's some lovely parting gifts.
Yeah, 6 out of 10 I think would be fair for Bosch.
Okay. you can pick another one. You know what the 10 are.
Who do I want to talk about next? Okay, let's talk about a general who I never built because of my forswearing of blue, but really, really was enticed by, Sidri, who I will not call Sidisi.
Yeah. Okay. So last time we talked about Sidri was in the Commander 2012, discussion.
Okay.
And I was not very high on her.
Okay.
And it's funny because some generals have a following behind them. Like,
yes.
Kali is very easy to say this about. Like, the army of Kali of players that get mad whenever I say something bad about her. Or.
Absolutely.
Or, I'm trying to think of other ones. Maelstrom Wanderer kinda has this. Or,
I'm trying to think. Anyone who plays tribal to a certain extent usually has this. Like, people tend to react poorly when you badmouth Krenko and stuff like that.
Sure.
Or even Azuri.
It's their pet thing.
Absolutely.
I didn't realize Sidri was one of those.
Oh, yes, she is. She 100% is.
So, I will say this. Since then, I will admit my opinions of Sidri has changed. And there are neat things you can do with Sidri. And if you are looking for to be an Esper artifact deck that focuses on cool games, interactions, doing stuff, versus, say, a more combo focus, Sidri is a solid choice.
Absolutely. With high combo potential still, like, she can totally combo hard, but she's so multifaceted in what she can do, and the stuff that she does is also super interesting. And I think that's her strongest point, is, like, you look at Sidri, and you have a hard time establishing where the power level is at, because you're so blinded by just, like, those are some really neat abilities that you can do cool stuff with.
Mm-hmm. Also, like, I'll admit being blinded by really pretty art.
Oh, yeah, the art on this card is easily, I think, yeah, easily the best of any of the cards we're going to discuss today.
Agreed.
And some of the cards we have today have, like, alternate promo foils and stuff, irrelevant.
Yeah. I'll take her. I will take Sidri over all of them.
Yeah.
I actually like Sidri. That being said, if you are trying for just, even with, like, an Esper, I feel like the other Esper one we're going to talk about is more powerful, but this one is by far leads to more interesting game states, and that it's not just every time I see the other one, who I'm trying not to say the name of right now, so we can talk about her in fairness in a minute, but I feel like Sidri is a Sidri deck is more likely to have an interesting game than the other one.
Absolutely. I agree with that. Just in case people don't know, Sidri is a 3-mana human artificer. She's a white, a blue, and a black to cast. She's a 2/2, and she's got two very cool abilities. One is blue, target non-creature artifact becomes an artifact creature with power and toughness each equal to its converted mana cost until end of turn. And one is white and black, target artifact creature gains death touch and lifelink until end of turn. So she can make tiny Wyrmcoil Engines. She can also do the Karn trick of turn your lands into artifacts and then kill them all.
Mm-hmm. It's got Karn's Touch plus Basilisk Collar.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a cool, cool ability. If you have an artifact that deals any kind of damage that you want to make into a creature, still activate its ability, deal damage, you can make it Death Touch and Lifelink. There's a bunch of other cool stuff you can do with this. And because of how multifaceted her ability is, like, she also leads to some interesting and unique decks. Like, she's one of the only people in this, list that we're going to continue on who can realistically have an eggs deck.
Sure.
Anything else to say about Sidri? What do you give Sidri out of 10? First, do you think that she'll be vying for top spot? And what do you give her out of 10?
Sidri has the issue of having some very tough competition coming.
Mm-hmm.
And that I feel like she's definitely better than Bosch. Like, I feel like she's probably a 7.5 to 8 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
I worry that she's up against 1, 2, at least 3 that I feel like are just going to beat her, and I feel like she comes in on equal power level to about 2 others on this list.
Okay. So, I think I'm more enamored with Sidri than you are.
Mm-hmm.
I've played against enough Sidri decks, and I've seen enough unique builds, and the other thing about Sidri that is just such a treat is that when I see my opponent's Sidri deck, I don't know what's in the deck before I play against them. In fact, I have no clue where they're going with it. So, I think I'm going to give Sidri an...
I settle towards 8. The more I think about it, the more I'm like, 8's a solid number.
I want to say 9, but I think I'm going to settle on 8.5.
Okay. So our average is 8.25 out of 10.
There you go. 8 1/4. So, who is next on the list, Noel?
You know, let's get this one out of the way because this one is so different than the others, and that is Bliss of the Traitor.
Yeah, very different. The only green one.
Yeah, because we had to have a 10th person on this list.
That yep, that is why that's why Bliss is here. We need we had 9 contenders. We needed around 10. But I have seen the Glissa eggs deck. It is a thing. And Glissa has the ability to make use of a lot of artifacts that don't otherwise get used and use them in very interesting ways.
Sure. The Glissa deck is going to be drastically different than any of the other ones here.
Absolutely.
In that Glissa also has access to the kind of green engine cards.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times you see this, like I see Glissa decks not so much as an artifact deck, but more like a green-black mid-range deck and kind of a green-black, I call them engines decks, like Survival of the Fittest, Birthing Pod, something that plays a lot of artifacts.
You should not underestimate the power of an artifact deck that gets access to Birthing Pod.
Yeah. That's real dumb real quick.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of, it is one of those things that it really likes to, kind of like Sindri, I guess, in that it really likes to assemble, well, no, that's not fair. It really likes to assemble engines, and it really likes to go for max value. Gliss is very good at sneaking out extra value out of some very kind of
innocuous
cards, yeah, like Executioner's Capsule, Moon Glove Extract, and stuff like that. And because of that, she ends, and it builds up so much without you noticing that she ends up winning a lot based on that alone. Like she'll just like get tiny value out of this incidental artifact like 2 or 3 times, and then she'll do it with another one, and then she'll do it with another one. And soon you'll realize that half of your board has been blown up by the same card over and over again, and that you've just been burning resources this whole time while Gliss has just been recycling. It's a really weird position to find yourself in.
Mm-hmm.
The other upside to Gliss, of course, is that while very few of these cards have bodies that are respectable or anything worth talking about, she's a 3/3 with first strike and death touch.
Yep, she can first touch people.
Yeah. First Strike and Death Touch are the chocolate and peanut butter of magic creatures. Like, nothing makes me happier than seeing a creature with First Strike and Death Touch.
Yeah, this card is just fine. And I've seen decks that really even can't capitalize on Gliss's activated ability, just because she has First Touch. She's the perfect blocker.
Can we call that ability Ankle Shank?
Sure, just for you, Eric.
Ankle Shanker, the Lord of Ankle Shanks. Yep, it's real good. That being said, she does not play like any of the other traditional artifacts decks we talked about. Like, even though she plays into a similar theme, recycling artifacts, getting extra value out of them, and stuff like that, she does it in such a different and unique way that it's hard to compare her to anything else on the list.
Yeah, I feel like I'm giving her probably a 7 out of 10 with disqualification from this list because she's not actually an artifact general.
I think I'd give her an 8 out of 10. I really like Glissa. And I've played with Glissa before. And she Mindslaver locks like no one else.
Yeah, so we'll say 7.5 out of 10 with disqualification for actually not being an artifact general.
Yeah, sure. Let's do that.
Alright, I believe it's your turn to pick.
It is my turn to pick. We have a surprising number of mono-red options right now, so I think I'm going to pluck one of those out so we don't end up talking about them all at the end. Let's choose one almost at random. Kirkesh, an Onaki Ancient.
Right, this card.
This card that we almost forgot about, with one of the weirdest pairings of creature types since the Simic came along, Ogre Spirit.
Yeah.
What?
But
what Kirkesh does, yeah, he's a 2 mana, or he's 2 colorless and 2 red, he's a 4/3, And whenever you activate an ability of an artifact, if it isn't a mana ability, you may pay one red. If you do, copy that ability. You may choose new targets for the copy. This deck screams combo.
And that's kind of my thought about it, too. It also screams bad combo. Because when you look at the type of artifacts that I want to copy the ability out of,
mm-hmm.
are not the ones that are seen play in the big red artifacts decks. Like, I can't copy any mana rocks with this. I can't copy things like Executioner's Capsule, like stuff like that. There's a few things in here that are sweet, like you know, copying stuff from like Temple Bell and getting more cards.
Yeah, I'm trying to. My roommate played Kirkesh for a long time, and I'm trying to remember what his favorite stuff to copy was. I know Trading Post was an all-star in his deck. Like he could win a game off the back of Trading Post alone. What else was there? There's actually some really good ones. Give me a second to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And copy that, sacrifice three artifacts, search your library for an artifact card and put it onto the battlefield. They'd usually find a way to copy it more than once and just dig up an entire combo and drop it in your lap. But, yeah, it was, I'm not gonna say it was a reliable deck.
Yeah, that's kind of my issue with it, is that it's just, and you got nothing else going for you on this card. Like, it's Ogres and Spirits, which Ogres have no support except for in bad Kalagana block cards, and the Spirit support sure isn't in red. It's a 4-3 for 4, so you're on curve but unexciting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you just got nothing, so you're playing it entirely for that copy ability, and I feel like there are better options in this color for doing what we want to do.
Yep. I'm looking at more of the cards you can copy with it now. There is some really cool stuff. I remember, the Predator Flagship. You can blow up a bunch of stuff, I think, if that's right. You can make, nearly unlimited creatures very quick with Spawning Pit. But it's, Kirkesh is a very, very cool card that suffers from better as one of the 99 syndrome. I don't think Kirkesh is the kind of card that you build your deck around. I think you have a good artifact deck already, and you slot him in, and he gets really, really crazy.
Sure.
So I'm going to give him, on the basis of that, I'll give him a 7.
Oh, you're way nicer than I am. I was going to say 5 of 10.
All right. So between the two of us, I guess he ends up at a 6.
Yeah.
I seem to
be the negative one here today, but all right.
Yeah, you seem to be judging these cards much more harshly than I
have. I have either higher standards or I just love the ones I love a lot more.
You have much higher standards than I, Noel. Sure. I'm a very cheap date.
Yeah, we've established this.
I was just entranced by Kirkesh's Buddha belly.
Yeah, and massive, massive tusks.
Moving on.
Edging ever closer to that iTunes explicit tag.
You get to pick the next guy we're going to be talking about.
Sure, watch this. Let's see if we can both laugh heartily for 30 seconds in Muzio. Okay, let's give him the fair shake.
Okay, let's give him the fair shake. First thing I want to say, right off the bat, definitely belongs in that awesome hat deck we talked about earlier.
Yes, agree. Has a cool hat.
Has a very, very cool hat. He's cheap. 3 mana for a 1/3 human artificer. And his ability is 4 mana, tap him, look at the top X cards of your library, where X is the highest converted mana cost among artifacts you control. You may reveal an artifact card from among them and put it onto the battlefield, put the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. I have seen him do good stuff. I have seen it with my own eyes.
Yes, I will agree that he's not unplayable.
No.
This one definitely suffers from being the second best one.
Yeah, he is the elephant in the room is that Muzio is not nearly as good as another card we're going to talk about in the same colors later on in the deck, in this, podcast. Like, he can whiff. Like, that's the big thing. Muzio, you can activate that ability and get absolutely nothing for it. And I have seen that happen more often than I have seen awesome stuff happen with him.
Sure. And the problem is you're also trying to dig out of a hole. Like,
yeah.
And like the other one, or a lot of these other ones have some rebuild potential. Like, worst case scenario, I just reset in a couple turns. This, you're spending 3 or 4 turns going, now I have a 3-mana cost one. Okay, I hit my Gilded Lotus. Now I have a 5-mana cost one. Now I hit my what, and trying to slowly work your way back up.
Yeah. He doesn't function with any kind of reliability or strength. Now, if you were playing to a lower powered play group, like if you had an awesome, later on we're going to talk about him, general deck, and you wanted to downgrade him to a lower power play group in order to have more fun, or if you wanted to just play spin the wheel, like he's reasonable for that, but he's just not impressive at all.
Yeah, just 4 of 10. I feel like I'm being generous at 4 of 10. Because he's not actively bad. He's just, it's not Gabriel Angelfire bad, but God, he suffers from being the second best in his color.
Yeah, and the thing is that I've seen him whiff enough times that I'm just going to give him a 3.
Ooh.
Like, when everything goes right and the stars align, he's a lot of fun and very cool to watch go off. But there exists a card that does everything he does 100 times better. And he's just like, there's nothing about him that's spectacular enough to make me stay with him.
Yeah, 3.5 out of 10. Whew, sorry, buddy.
Yeah, your fancy hat isn't going to save you from that one.
Yeah, wow, okay. Your turn.
My turn. Let's talk about...
Eventually we're going to get all the, like... lousy ones out. Like, to me, like, the best of the, wait, I think we have probably one of the top 5 talked about so far.
Well, then let's go ahead and talk about the guy who we were hinting at when we were talking about Musio, Arkham Dagson.
Hello, Captain Combo.
Yeah, Arkham Dagson is 3 and a blue for a 2/2 human artificer. Tap, pay no mana, just tap, target artifact creature's controller sacrifices it. That player may search his or her library for a non-creature artifact card, put it into play, then shuffle his or her library. This card is spectacularly powerful.
Yeah.
Like, silly, silly powerful. The fact that it's an artifact creature is kind of a speed bump, but not really. Like, you can't just turn any artifact into any other artifact in your deck. Like, so the concession that you have to turn an artifact creature into some kind of artifact is nice, and it seems like it would slow down an Arkham Dagson deck. It does not. It does nothing to slow down an Arkham Dagson deck at all.
Yeah. Everybody heard of Tinker? I hear Tinker was okay.
I hear that was a decent card that might have done 1 or 2 good things.
Yeah. This card is bonkersly powerful, you know?
It's super powerful.
I'm going to. And it's never, and here's the sad part, is it's always powerful and almost never fun.
Yeah. It's, well, I'm sure the person playing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no, let's be honest. The person playing it has fun the first time. After that, it's either you're the Joker or you are playing it out of some, you think you're having fun.
Yeah, and the other problem with Arkham Dagson is that he suffers from his power level, in that if you're at a 4-player table, you flip over Arkham Dagson, man, there better be a Nekusar or a Purphoros there to draw the hate away from you, because otherwise Arkham Dagson's gonna take it to the dome.
Yeah, you're just, are you prepared to start the game at 15 life? Like, that should be
yeah.
Which you can, but don't get me wrong, you can survive that with Arkham.
Oh yeah, you can still totally win. With all that hate coming at him in Arkham, that's why people do it.
Yeah.
But just be prepared to handle it. Don't sit down thinking you're going to have friends when you're playing an Arkham Dagson deck, because you are alone.
Yeah, that, this card never does anything fun. Like, it'd be different if there was, like, that Arkham deck and then a cool Arkham deck.
But there's not really. Not a thing that exists. So, yeah. What are you going to rate Arkham Dagson?
With it being as powerful as it is, it'd be disrespectful to give it a high number. I can't go real high, though, because everyone knows it, and that there's no, like, we're objectively best does not necessarily mean just power level. I go 7 out of 10.
See, I'm gonna have to give him like, I'm giving him a 9.
That's fair, because I feel like we just hit it about an 8. So yeah.
Yeah, he's super powerful. He can survive the hate that he draws. The ability to tutor in EDH is just cannot be overstated how powerful that is. Like, he's nuts. He's absolutely nuts. In terms of power level, if we were judging this based on power level alone, almost inarguably the best of the possible generals.
Agreed.
Like, but that is not what we're judging it on. So I'm, because of the hate, because of the unfun factor, I'm going to lop off that one point, that one little bit of wiggle room.
Okay, let's go to someone that is remarkably more fun, and more fun and very different. And let's talk about our Planeswalker commander, Duretti Shaper Savant.
Oh my god! Professor X the Goblin!
Scrap.
Not Wheels!
Scrap Savant, not Shaper Savant. Yep. My apologies.
Duretti is so cool.
The Goblin Pope.
Oh my god. Also, magnificent hat.
Yeah, another great hat.
What is it with all these artificers and their sweet hats? I think artificers use hats to measure their stat, their status.
He is a former student of Muzio.
Oh my god, did he steal Muzio's great hat?
That could be. Or he's from the same like artificer order as Muzio. So that may be why the hats look similar.
Yeah. But he's super cool. You want to read off the abilities on this guy?
Sure. He starts at 3 loyalty, is at red and 3, and he reads a +2, discard 2 cards, then draw that, discard up to 2 cards, then draw that many cards. -2, sack an artifact. If you do, return an artifact from your graveyard to the battlefield. And -10, you get an emblem. Whenever an artifact is put into your graveyard from the battlefield, return that card to the battlefield at the beginning of the next end step.
So my first argument for how good this guy is that I'm going to say that since release day of this product, I have played my single copy of Duretti in a deck constantly. I have yet to have a amount of time pass where he was not active in a deck. I have never built around him, and he has still made it into one of the red decks I have in rotation at all times. He's that good.
Sure. And this card is just fine. As one of the 99, it's okay with, even if you're not super artifact heavy, like, if you're in mono red, going 2 cards deeper is not a thing to shake a stick at.
Absolutely. And even if you're running, like, minimal artifact creatures, if your artifact creatures amount to, like, Worm Coil and Steel Hellkite, and maybe, like, a Solemn Simulacrum, the ability late game to turn a Soul Ring or a Sensei's Top into one of those things is huge.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very much like, these abilities are all solid without being overpowering. I also love him as a general. He's super fun. His deck, I would say that of the Commander Precon decks, the red one was probably the closest to being out of the box something that was good enough. Mm-hmm. And when you tune that thing up a little bit, that thing just hums right along. I have it here. This is one of them I've played.
Yep.
I've played Duretti before. I actually really love, because to me it's the right level of power. It's not going to draw the same hate as, like, Arkham or the other one we'll probably talk about next, I'm guessing.
Absolutely.
But it's still a fun and still very powerful for what it does. It also hides behind mono red, which really isn't something mono red can hide behind very much longer. We're totally honest, like, 5 years ago when I started playing Commander, no one ever played Mono Red because Mono Red was terrible, air quotes, but this
now is, Mono Red is a deck to be feared.
Yeah, Mono Red is just freaking acceptable. And
yeah. Now when you sit down and someone pulls out a Mono Red deck, you're like, he either has no idea what he's doing or he really knows what he's doing.
Yeah, one of two things is about to happen here.
as a general, like, if you had told me 3 years ago that I was going to be able to play Goblin Welder as my general, I would have been like, that's amazing! But a Goblin Welder that lets you dig through your deck in red, which is the biggest fault that red has, like one of the things it has the hardest time with is like gleaning card advantage, digging through your deck. And while this isn't like true card advantage, the fact that you're setting up for his second ability makes it card advantage.
Uh-huh.
It's so good. I cannot sing this guy's praises enough. The only problem I possibly have with him is that he definitely suffers from the Planeswalker syndrome of the ultimate that you will never, ever get to use.
Yeah, you'll never get to use that. Ever, ever, ever. If the table lets you, you get to quickly win.
Yeah, but, like, he's so good that the fact that you'll never get to use his ultimate doesn't distract from him at all.
Mm-hmm. And he only costs 4, so you can cast him 2 or 3 times before it gets to the point where it's really obscenely expensive.
Especially since you're playing an artifact-heavy deck that likes to swap artifacts on the battlefield with stuff in the graveyard, because that means you're probably running a lot of mana rocks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, love Duretti. Lots of love for this little goblin. 9 out of 10?
I'm giving Duretti the full 10.
Oh, 9.5 out of 10 for Duretti.
I can't find a reason, because the way I'm doing this is that every card starts at 10 and then you ding points off for various things. I can't find a reason to give Duretti less than 10. He's, in terms of power, he's extraordinarily powerful. He does not draw hate and is very fun. He does something different every game. He's very cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, love me some Duretti. So let's go ahead and let's move away from Duretti. We can either get rid of the one. We have one. It's funny because we have 3 left, 2 of which are super powerful, and 1 of which I feel like we should have been talking about back with, like, Sidri and Kirkesh and Glissa.
All right. We're going to talk about Karn.
Okay, let's talk about Karn. See, Karn is on my big list of, like, big powerful ones.
See, my problem with trying to put Karn on the list of big powerful ones, for those of you who don't know, Karn is a... Oh, I clicked on the wrong card. I think he's 4 mana, right?
He's yeah. 5.
Oh, 5. Karn is a 5 mana 4/4. Whenever he blocks or becomes blocked, he turns into a 0/8. And he's got, you can pay 1, target non-creature artifact becomes an artifact creature with power and toughness each equal to its converted mana cost until end of turn. If you had told me, like, 5 years ago, I would have completely agreed with you, but Karn's been replaced by Sidri in my book.
Yeah, and I feel bad for that, because this is a nostalgia factor thing, and I'll be the first to admit it, but Karn was that, like, he's been here forever, and he's one of the last, like, let's be honest, the generals we were playing 5 years ago and the generals we're playing now have changed almost completely.
Almost completely.
Like, very few, there are very few, let's say, Alara block forward generals who still see hardly any play. Like, you'll have a few, don't get me wrong, there are a few, but for the most part, it's about being shiny and new.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of some of the older ones. Arkham and Xur still see play because they're still super powerful.
Una
sometimes sees play, yeah. Cleek?
Yeah, maybe in your meta.
The Azami?
Yeah, Azami, what's her name? Not Azami, the green one.
Oh, Azusa.
Azusa.
Oh man, we're really struggling to remember any more, like, older generals that still see heavy play. That's a bad sign.
Yeah, like, and Karn is one of those that you can go, yeah, he still hangs with it, but he doesn't.
He doesn't. He's been kind of usurped by Sidisi. That being said, he's still cool. Like, he's still, that ability is still very good. It's just that Sidisi also does it and does other stuff and lets you play with colors, which is a big deal.
Yeah, I'm just going to throw out you just said Sidisi twice.
God, no, Sidri! Damn it.
We knew it was going to happen.
I was trying so hard. So, yeah. Like, you were so excited for Karn. I heard you building him up, and then he's just kind of been...
I'm looking at the world through Urza's sunglasses, like...
We all still play Karn Liberated. That can be your that can be your comfort. Karn hasn't been replaced. He just got an upgrade.
Okay, fine.
So what do you give Karn?
It probably deserves lower, but I'm going to say probably 6 or 7.
See, I was going to give him 6.
Yeah, he's probably still, a 6.
He's still good. He's just been replaced. That's all. There's
Sorry.
No reason to put up with his weaknesses anymore.
Sorry, buddy. And you're no basic lands.
No basic lands is a really hard pill to swallow.
Yeah. Sorry, buddy.
All right, you get to pick the next one. Which of the last two are we going to talk about?
Okay. Let's get Slobat out of the way, because I feel like this is another one that was way back there that we just kind of missed on the power level.
I like Slobat because of he is a goblin artificer, and the flavor text on him is hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not great. He's not terrible either. His ability is Slobat Goblin Tinkerer. He's a 2-mana 1/2, so he's a cheap date. He's mono red. He's a Goblin Artificer Legend, back when you still had to tag Legend at the end. Mm-hmm. And he's got sacrifice an artifact, target artifact becomes indestructible until end of turn. That's a decent ability, but the problem is that he basically amounts to being a sac outlet. Like, that's all he is a sac outlet for artifacts that you want to pitch to the graveyard.
Yep, he would like, Duretti and Bosch would both like Words With You as far as, well, no, he's better than Bosch, but...
Yeah, I think he's better than Bosch at the, like, mono-red artifact thing, but I don't think he holds a candle to Duretti. Like, kind of like Karn before Duretti came out, you could look at Slobat and be like, okay, he's got a place, but now that, Duretti's out, he has completely usurped him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so what are you gonna give poor Slobat?
I feel like he's earned the same 6 we gave Karn.
I'm gonna actually give him slightly less than that. Karn can still do a lot more stuff than Slobat does, I feel.
True, and at least Karn is an interesting deck. Like, Slobat is just objectively worse than Duretti.
Well, yeah, it's objectively worse than... But Karn is I'm giving Slobat a... Oh, I'm going to give Slobat a 4.
Yeah, I'm going to get to 5 out of 10 on Slobat.
Slobat was a deck that used to be so cool when you made it work. Like, mm-hmm. it really was. It was like you win with Bludgeon Brawl and some other stuff. It was a super cool deck to make work, but now it's just not... It just doesn't have the juice.
Yeah, thanks for coming out.
So last is Sharoom.
Yep.
Sharoom, the big elephant in the room.
Yeah, and really... kind of ends up being the gold standard to measure. It's one of those things that she's kind of the, let's call her the litmus test.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with that. Because Sharoom is kind of like when you think of scary artifact generals, whether Sharoom is still the strongest, it's still the first one everyone thinks of.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been reprinted so many times, like, everyone's played against the Sharoom deck at some point. Everyone knows the combo. She's very powerful. But she's been met in power level is the problem. Like, where Karn and Slobat got just blown out by other cards, the other cards have finally caught up to where Sharoom is at.
Sure. Maybe it's fair to say this, is that for a long time, Sharoom was the beginning and end of the artifact EDH deck conversation.
Absolutely.
Like, it's that was the deck. And now there are... even within her color identity, another alternative.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, she's still one of the big bads of, like, generals that still see play. They're still, if you were going to say competitive, or that's not the right word, but objectively powerful.
Mm-hmm. She is, if you fail to, I am less impressed with Sharoom decks than I used to be. I think that a lot of decks have caught up to her in terms of power. However, I will still say that the moment you stop respecting the Sharoom deck, it kills you.
I will say this too. Sharoom is the most likely to inadvertently get a new player to have a lousy commander experience.
Oh, yeah. Maybe Arkham could be worse. Oh! If he's piloting Sharoom, you mean?
Not even that, but if you're going, I'm gonna build an EDH deck.
Mm-hmm.
And, you go and you get, you're like, I wanna build an artifact deck, and, you know, it'd be fun to have kind of, oh, what do I have for options? Well, the Sharoom is everywhere. And you build a not combo Sharoom, but just Esper artifacty good stuff Sharoom.
Yeah.
And sit down and everyone assume that you have Sculpting Skill and Disciple of the Vault on lock and just proceed to punch your face in.
Absolutely, that would happen. You can build Sharoom without the combo. You can't accidentally build Karn Arkham without the combo.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, I think she's still very, very powerful. She does draw that same Arkham hate.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think she's as powerful in comparison to everything else that she was once was. But like, she's still so good.
I feel like she's an 8.5.
I'm going to give her a 9. I'm going to put her on the same level as Arkham.
So that puts her at an average of 8.75 out of 10.
8.75. Her and Sidisi floating around in the mushy middle.
You mean
so
Sidri?
God! I'm going to put my head through my laptop screen.
Next week on Commander, next week on Rivals Duel, we'll talk about black, we'll talk about the top 10 black generals with exploit for Eric.
God damn it. But yeah, so using our totally not by any...
completely bogus math system.
Our completely bogus math system, I think Duretti comes out on top, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think our big ones are these are the creme de la creme. It looks like Duretti, Sharum, Sidri, Arkham.
Yeah, I think I'm going to call the top three Duretti, Sharum, and Arkham, but I'm going to give an honorable mention to Sidri for
sure.
Being rad.
Yep. After that, let's see, on our list, Glissa the Traitor sans disqualification for not being an artifact deck. And then you head into this, like, middle of the road, Kirkesh, Bosch, Karn, kind of middle of the roads with Muzio and Slowbad being our standout bad cards.
Yep, sounds about right.
Yeah. Sorry, Muzio.
Muzio got the bottom of the totem pole. I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah.
Take your big hat and sit down in the corner, think about what you've done.
Pretty much.
So let us know in the comments and by email what you think of our list. Do you agree with us? Do you disagree with us? Is there an artifact general that we missed? Because I'm sure that there's one that we missed.
Yep. I am fully ready to get hate mail from the three remaining Jor Kadeem players.
Memnarch players are going to be like, why wasn't he there? He's not an artifact deck. He's a steal people stuff deck. Get over it.
He's a blue combo deck. The fact that he's an artifact is irrelevant. Yeah, I think that's it. But let us know what you think. Let us know if we are horribly wrong one way or the other about these, if we're looking at the world through Duretti-colored glasses. I would be interested to hear other people's experience with these 10 generals or with other ones of this nature.
Absolutely. I would be interested to hear whether, like, some of the decks that we talked about, the way they get treated, don't get treated that way. If there's, like, a Sidisi or a Duretti deck that just tore up your meta once and now draws huge amounts of hate.
You mean a Sidri or a Duretti deck?
I hate you so much, Noel. I wish I could hate you into having a migraine.
You are the one who is saying it over and over again. I'm just reminding
you. I know. Sidri. Sidri.
Now, would you play a Sidisi in your Sidri deck?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a demonic
card.
Would not play Sidri in a Sidisi deck. Anyway.
Anyway. Now, I think that's it for today. Yeah, Where can they reach you, Noel, if they want more of our good stuff?
Sure. As always, we do check the comments on CommanderCast.com and on MTGCast.com. If you'd like to get a hold of me personally, you can hit me up on email at NoelClausen, NoelClausen, @gmail.com. I'm also on Twitter at MTGNoel.
Yep, you can get a hold of me at ericbonvie@gmail.com. It's ericbonvie @gmail.com. Had a moment there where I was going to be like, am I going to misspell my name? Then I'm at @thatbonvieguy on Twitter. You can also get a hold of either of us at the Facebook page at facebook.com/rivalsduel. Where we post the episodes, we post episode relevant stuff, we ask questions. Yep, it's
sure.
That's where stuff goes down.
Yep. Also, if you're looking for RSS feed, it is feeds.feedburner.com/rivalsduel.
Mm-hmm. And that's it for today. I think we're going to wrap this one up. And thanks for coming out, Noel. I think we had a good time with this gauntlet. This might be a section that we may have to bring back and do again, because I like occasionally being able to just have relaxed conversations about which cards suck.
Sure, fair enough. All right, well, thank you, everyone, and thanks for listening. You can hit me up on my wow. All right, stop. We're gonna try that again.
I may have been mixing up names, but at least I know how to talk.
Yep. I cannot brain today. I has the dumb.